As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you once more on your Coolest Conversations podcast in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and remember to like and subscribe, rate and review. My guest today is Cole Alexander, a founding member and one of the guitar players in the Atlanta, Georgia band The Black Lips. They've been rocking out since their teens, toured the world numerous times, and their new album, The Black Lips Sing in a World That's Falling Apart, is their ninth full-length. Our coolest song in the world, Odelia, is off of it, so let's hear some of that now, and then I'll start chatting with Cole on your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Odelia, you know how to make a man insane. Odelia, you know how to make a me deranged. I take it that your pleasure is to be the queen of pain. Where there was a way that I could just forget your name. Odelia, Odelia.
Hey, this is the Mighty Manfred. And my guest today on our Coolest Conversations is Cole Alexander, guitarist, vocalist, and one of the founding members of the Black Lips. How are you, Cole?
I'm good. Howdy doody.
Well, we both know each other from Atlanta, but I was reading, I didn't know this, that the band had started in Dunwoody. And for those that don't know, Dunwoody is in the Atlanta area. Turns out I went to Dunwoody High School for 2 years. And I think I graduated from there when you were like 1 year old. Now, did you grow up in Dunwoody?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I grew up mostly in Dunwoody. I think I lived in Savannah for a year when I was like 4, but mostly in Dunwoody, Georgia. And I had no idea you went to high school there.
That's right.
What year was that around?
Oh, man. So you were you born in 1982?
Yes.
Okay, so I graduated the following year in 83. And so I went there for two years, like 82, 83, graduated 83. However that math works out, I went there for 2 years. And in fact, my parents live on Walmack Road still. My dad does.
Oh, wow. Just like probably around the corner from probably where I grew up.
Did you go to Dunwoody High School?
Yeah, that is correct. I went to Dunwoody High School. Yeah, and our band kind of started out of Dunwoody High School. Like, the biggest show we ever played for the first 5 years was at the talent show at Dunwoody High School. I knew Ryan Seacrest went to Dunwoody High School, but I didn't know there was somebody else in the industry, music industry like yourself that also went there.
Yeah, that's, well, it's the three of us. We're the triumvirate. You, me, and Ryan Seacrest. Tell me about the talent show. How many songs did you play, and did they let you finish the set?
I want to say they almost kind of, well, there was a video of the talent show, and I feel like they kind of cut us out because we were still kind of learning our instruments and maybe not so hot. But I do remember we did a cover of Louie Louie, and we did the song Rumble by Link Ray, which are both songs you might play in the Underground Garage. So it was a fitting, good show.
Very cool.
But I think that other people were maybe bored by it.
Well, man, you were giving them the straight rock and roll lesson there. So I used to work at a record store in town there, Atlanta, Wuck Street Records, and I remember you guys coming in and buying like 60s garage rock compilations. How did you find out about that stuff?
I have to say, I was very flattered that I was getting to do this interview with you because I've been listening to the radio program for a long time. I used to work at the Majestic Diner in Atlanta, and I'd always tune in to the Underground Garage, and I heard you're a DJ there now, but I remember some of the first garage rock records I ever bought, which were inspiration to my band Bachlets, were from you. You sold me, like, basically my introductory records to the music that I now play. So it was very flattering, full circle kind of thing to get to do an interview with you.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
You might have sold me, like, a Standell's records. I mean, you might have even been recommending me things because I didn't know a lot. You know, and not all, I think not every store had 13-floor elevators or the Standells, and your store did. And you would, you know, point me in the right direction when I had a question and stuff. Because it can be intimidating at record stores. Sometimes they're very, like, you know it all and stuff. So I always appreciated your, you know, shining a beacon of light on the music that I love.
You're such a nice guy, man. Thanks very much. That's very sweet of you to say.
I mean, yeah, it's just the honest truth. So we always really appreciated that.
Well, so you mentioned the talent show doing Rumble and playing Louie Louie. So what drew you to that kind of rock and roll stuff to start playing that?
Well, I have to say is that when I was a little kid, you know, I liked the Beatles and Nirvana was the big thing at the time, and I liked that. But the Nirvana thing kind of turned me on to punk rock. So then as I got older, I found out about, like, the Ramones and Sex Pistols. But then I always wondered, well, what did the Ramones listen to? So that kind of brought me to go farther backwards. And I just kind of was always looking for the roots of punk rock, because I love punk rock. But the roots of it always, like, sounded the best to me. And the roots are kind of in garage rock, which is why I was always a fan of, you know, the Underground Garage, because it's kind of specialized in that. Tim Fowley was a DJ.
Right.
I love Tim Fowley. He was like a hero of mine. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Kim Fowley?
I did meet Kim Fowley a couple times. We had talked about him producing a record for us, and it kind of ended up falling through, which I deeply regretted. But before he sadly passed away, I did a show with a side band of mine in Los Angeles, and he was there. He was like the master of ceremonies. But I was very impressed with Kim because I think, you know, he may have been dying at this time, but it was 4 a.m, and they wheeled him out with 2 girls into a convertible, and it was just, I could tell he's a total lifer, you know, like, nothing was going to stop him from doing his thing, you know, be it, you know, dying of a fatal disease, he was going to rock till the end, you know, he's like the essence of a true rocker, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people got it or not. He was like the best. He was going to go till 4 a.m, no matter what. Like, yeah, that's how I saw him.
Cole, I wanted to ask you, when did you start playing guitar?
I think I started trying to play guitar maybe around 11 or 12. See, my dad played guitar, but his problem was he had gotten in a motorcycle accident when he was a little kid, and he got a bunch of his fingers chopped off. So he couldn't play very well with the fingers chopped off. He was no Django Reinhardt, but he did learn the slide guitar because it was a little bit easier to put a slide over his stub of a finger.
Yeah.
And then he showed me how to play in the open E tuning because that's the way he knew how to play. And that made it much easier to learn because I wasn't very natural at it at the beginning. I think I sat with that guitar for the first 5-6 years not being able to play anything, you know, but thank God there's that tuning because it makes it a little more simplified. And I later found out, like, people like Kid Congo, the Gun Club, that he loves the open E tuning, and that's how he plays. So not just the old blues guys, but a lot of people use that tuning. And I'd recommend it to anybody starting guitar. Start playing with the slide, you know, you're already playing chords if you tune it right, you know.
Well, I'm going to ask you more about the slide because maybe that ties into some of the new record, but still kind of focused here a little bit longer on the beginnings. Your bandmate Ben Eberbaugh, he passed away back in 2002 from a drunk driver.
Yeah, he was driving back to the city because we grew up maybe a little outside of Atlanta, and he went to visit some friends and family, and then he was coming back on the highway known as 400. at night, and then someone was going on the wrong way on the highway with the lights out on their car. So he I guess wasn't able to see that because they had their lights out, and it was just a head-on collision. And he passed away like that with his guitars and amps in the car and everything. And that was really tragic for us. He knew how to play guitar much better too, so he was kind of like, you know, showing me a lot of the ropes. So that was a real big loss for us, just losing a bandmate so early and a friend and whatnot.
Well, like yourself, I've had band members pass on unexpectedly, and I guess for you now, it's been like 18 years. What do you think his reaction would be to all you guys, all you've seen and done, if he were still around?
Well, we were a little torn. We're like, do we continue? But we knew that he loved to play music and wanted to continue playing music, so we kind of felt like we were, you know, carrying on the torch of what he loved by continuing to play. So, yeah, we kind of do it in a sense that we're, like, kind of carrying on his spirit, you know? We still the records that we played with him at our shows, and people can still hear them. And, yeah, so we're just kind of trying to spread that gospel of his love for music in the short time that we had with him. But he was very passionate about music. I mentioned Kim Fowley was, like, a lifer. I would imagine he'd be the kind of guy that would still be playing music, because he was always into it since the time he was a small child.
Very cool. And so he was playing with you guys when you first formed there in Dunwoody.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So he put on a first album that was on Bomp Records, and he's even on one song on the second album, which is also on Bomp Records out of Burbank, California. And yeah, and then that was it. But it was pretty much the first album that he played on.
So the new album, let's talk about that. The Black Lips Sing in a World That's Falling Apart, that came out on January the 24th. I think it's like your ninth studio album. You've done country-flavored songs over the years. What possessed you guys to do pretty much a full-on country album?
Yeah, I think we kind of been making the same kind of straightforward, kind of garagey punk records over and over. And we kind of wanted to do something with a more like thematic kind of vibe, so we decided to just kind of focus on one aspect of our sound, which is, as you said, we've done some twangy kind of stuff in the past, but we decided to focus on just one thing to change it up from the other albums. But coincidentally, country music has become very hip in the last couple of years, so it's kind of exciting to kind of be in tune with what's going on in pop culture, because usually I feel like we're at odds with what's going on in pop culture. You know, there was a big garage rock revival in the early 2000s, and we kind of missed that wave a little bit, but I feel like I feel a buzz around country music right now, and it's cool to kind of be in tune with the mainstream for the first time, because we're not the type of band that just kind of follow the trends naturally. But if it just so happens to have to be, then, you know, we'll do it. Then that's what's kind of happening right now. I mean, even country is being infused into hip-hop music now, like if that gives you any indication of how popular it's become, you know?
Right. Well, the album, my notes say, is produced by Nick Jodwan. Who is he?
Yeah. Yeah, and he did it at a studio called Valentine Studios, which is a fantastic place. That was like a time capsule. It was located in Los Angeles, and it closed in the early 70s. And he kind of came across it, and basically nothing had been updated since the time it closed in the, you know, early 70s, let's say. So it was like literally a time capsule, like going back in time with all original, you know, wall decor with shag carpets on the wall and the original tape machines that he had to refurbish. And there was a lot of history there, like the Beach Boys recorded their 2020 album there. They recorded a song by Charles Manson, which I believe was called Never Learn Not to Love. They had that record on the wall, and I was really surprised to see that.
Yeah.
Also, Kenny Rogers in the first edition recorded I Just Dropped In to See What Condition My Condition Was In, which is kind of a psychedelic country song, so that's kind of perfect sound for what we were trying to do.
Right.
You know, kind of mixed garage rock and country. So there was a lot of great history at the studio, and it was really fun to record there. I highly recommend you would check it out in Valley Village, California.
Will do, man. So our coolest song in the world this week is Odelia, And my notes again say that everybody contributed to writing it.
Yes, yeah, we kind of all write the songs. I think Oakley, our drummer, our new drummer, he was like the main force in running that song, but we kind of all write songs in our band, and we all sing. We took a little like page from the Beatles, how they like all sing, except we all write music too, is on top of all singing.
Well, who came up with Odelia's name?
Yeah, that was, we were trying to figure out, maybe it was Delia. I think we were calling it Delia for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then for some reason, it became Odelia. I think we were saying, oh, like, oh, I love you, Odelia, and then just somehow fused into some original name, Odelia.
Well, how often have you dealt with a character like Odelia? Have you come across her a number of times over the course of your amorous adventures?
There have been times where, yes, we've had the fortune to come across a fiery passion of love with women and men of different names. And yeah, and there was never actual Odelia, but it's, yeah, loosely inspired on several different, like an amalgamation of several fiery people that we may have loved in our lives.
Yeah. Well, another favorite track of mine off the album is Gentleman. And I think that's got the best lyric line I've heard so far in 2020. And I know the year is young, but this is going to be a hard one to beat, the line, and I feel like a strung out snuffleupagus. Now, who came up with that?
Oh, yeah. I kind of pretty much wrote the lyrics to that song. Yeah, I think we were trying to go for a kind of outlaw Kris Kristofferson Sunday morning kind of vibe. And But I wanted it to be more, a little more absurd. So that we were taking a lot of the traditional folk and country there to try to make him a little bit more irreverent and absurd. So you get some weird lines on some of the songs like that. Oh. Snuffleupagus always had kind of lazy eyes. So that was why we brought that up.
That's right. I hadn't thought about that. He does have a lazy sort of eyes. Did you watch much Sesame Street growing up?
Yeah, I did watch Sesame Street, and I'm pretty big fan of Jim Henson. I love the puppetry arts and stuff. I could do without all the new CGI. It's kind of like overtaken, you know, all the film stuff. I miss the old animatronics and puppetry, but I'm kind of a Luddite in that sense that I like a lot of the, you know, older forms of arts like that, like puppetry arts. And in Atlanta, we have the Center for Puppetry Arts.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I've been there a number of times when my daughter was younger. Did you ever see the Electric Company growing up?
That name rings a bell. Is that like a group and based out of Atlanta?
Well, it was like the Sesame Street if you were a real little kid, and then after that would come the Electric Company, which was another program. So you'd be a little bit older, and that was actually much more, for lack of a better term, much more psychedelic. You know, it was early 70s,
yeah.
And it's kind of it's still a fun show. They didn't have as many puppets though. Not as much. I don't think the Muppets were involved with that.
It was like Sid and Marty Krofft kind of thing.
But it was like a learning thing, right? It was like a PBS show. And it may have been the same folks that did Sesame Street, even that I don't quite remember. After I heard your track, Gentleman, the line about the snuffleupagus, of course, I was thinking about the snuffleupagus, and I found out that there is an episode of Sesame Street where the adults finally meet Snuffleupagus, that he's not an imaginary friend of Big Bird's anymore. And I was crushed.
I never realized that he was even an imaginary friend. I just thought he was a legitimate character. But it's been so long since I watched the show. I didn't even realize that he wasn't real.
I know, it was for a while.
There's a lot of imaginary friends through childhood, you know.
Do you recall any of your imaginary friends in childhood?
Wow, but my memory's pretty shot these days. But I do remember having such things, but. I mean, I think I used to imagine being in a rock and roll band before I was in a band. Like, my first bands were probably imaginary bands in elementary school. You know, I'd draw pictures of, you know, flyers and shows and stuff. Because, like I said, it took me a long time to kind of figure out how to play guitar. So for the first 10 years, it was pretty much just in my imagination.
So you are a little kid before you can play, and you're thinking of yourself being in a band. You mentioned your dad, you know, playing guitar. I mean, was there a lot of music in the household and stuff when you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, my mom liked a little music, but she wasn't like a buff per se. Yeah. But I do remember I used to work at the Majestic Diner, and they had a prison program where guys who were on a halfway house coming out of prison could work in the kitchen. And one of the guys brought in a tape of Prince's Purple Rain. And I remember feeling kind of emotional when the songs were playing because I liked it so much. And I asked my mom about it. She said, oh, yeah, I remember taking you to the film Purple Rain in the theater, and I was breastfeeding in the theater. And she told me how she got scolded by some guy sitting next to us for breastfeeding me during Purple Rain. So I thought maybe there were some Freudian implications to why I felt so emotional and that when the Purple Rain songs started playing. So she did turn me on to some music like Van Morrison and Prince. And so, yeah, there was some music in my household growing up.
So you've gone and you've achieved this dream. You've been in this band. You put out all these records. Is this your parents kind of like, oh, my God, I can't believe you've done this? Or they think that you're just completely out from outer space? What is their reaction to your music career?
I think they're pretty happy because I was never too good at school. And my bandmate Jared Sweeley wasn't very good at school. As a matter of fact, we got kicked out of high school for just being kind of derelicts. So we had to do something, and it was great that music was a possibility for us, and we were able to do that. So our parents are proud that we got to do what we love, you know, for a living. It's great.
So another track on the album I want to mention real quick is Locust. I just think I love the way it's all put together. I think it's really well thought out, how the ear candy bits kind of build through the song. Whose idea was the tremolo guitar on that?
I feel like I played the tremolo guitar, but the song was Jeffrey Clark's, who's a new member of our band. He used to be in a band called the Demon Squaws, who are from Canada. But I think I might have added that touch because, as I said earlier, we all kind of collaborate on songs. Mm-hmm. And I think I might have added the tremolo guitar. But the tricky part with that is trying to get the tremolo, you know, it cuts in and out with the sound and the volume going up and down. Right. It's hard to get it in time with the rhythm. I always have trouble with that live. Yeah, and I don't know if you guys have any tips for me, but let me know if you know how to time it, you know, to your drummer.
Now, that is, yeah, really, really hard. Are you familiar with that Liars song, Help You Am?
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Liars.
Right. So, you know, it's the whole thing is that tremolo. And I have seen them a number of times when the mono man is up there on stage.
Yeah, mono man. Yeah.
It's like screaming at the guitar player to, you know, get it right. And it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Bo Diddley, I think he probably got it best.
So last week, you were doing some shows in Florida. I know starting February the 19th, you're going to be in Chapel Hill. That's at the Cat's Cradle. And from there, you've got like 20 shows or so lined up. You play through the Northeast and Canada, the Midwest. Then you do like two nights of the Earl in Atlanta. Lots of shows back to back. So the touring life, you're still good with that, right?
Oh, yeah. We still tour probably more than most bands. I know you've toured a lot, but it's just, you know, a great way to spread the music around, and it's kind of a way to get the new album out there. So probably be touring pretty heavy throughout the summer, spring and summer.
And so do you have the shows like one night after another back to back? That's pretty taxing, isn't it?
Yeah, we get pretty tired from time to time, but I can't complain, you know. Anything to stop me from having to clock in and clock out of like a 9-to-5, because I'm not much of a morning person. So yeah, I can't complain, I guess, even if it is tiring.
What's your favorite road food?
Well, I love the Waffle House, but the problem is they mostly consist in the South. Sometimes you'll find two Waffle Houses on, you know, within one or two exits, you know.
Yeah.
But I like the Waffle House because the food is great. I find it better than Denny's and all these other ones. And they always have a jukebox. And so, you know, you can come in at 3 a.m. and listen to Elvis Presley or the Rolling Stones. And you can't do that at IHOP or Denny's or most places. So I love the Waffle House. And not to toot my own horn, but they even sometimes have Blacklist songs on the jukebox because now they have these digital jukeboxes. They can, like, pull up songs. And they even have Black Lips on the jukebox here. So Waffle House has got to be my favorite roadside food stop. The farthest one west, I think, is in Phoenix, Arizona, possibly. But they start to get farther and fewer between the farther away from the South you get.
Did you know that in somewhere between, I think, between Decatur and Avondale in the Atlanta area, there is the very first Waffle House? And it's not like functional. It's like as a museum. Have you ever driven past that?
Correct. I have driven past that. We used to have a practice space and studio right around the corner from there. And in the font for the Waffle House, it's kind of like syrup-y dripping letters. You know, like the W is like dripping. It almost looks like similar to the font of Rocky Horror Picture Show, but it's supposed to be syrup and not blood, the syrup that would go on the waffles.
Oh, man, Cole, so we can only play one other tune from the new album right now, from Sing in a World That's Falling Apart, and I want us to take a listen to Angola Rodeo. So Zumi Rosso, she's playing sax on it, is that right?
That's right, yeah, she's our saxophone player, but she also plays other instruments, but yeah, any sax is always done by her.
And how did that song come together?
So I think we were on a tour, and towards the end, we were going through Louisiana, and we'd always heard that there was a rodeo at the Angola prison, and, you know, we're big fans of Lead Belly, and we heard that, you know, when he was in prison for murder, he was at the Angola prison, you know, and it's like this spooky Southern Gothic kind of place, like surrounded by swamps and alligators, so you can't get out, but they have a biannual rodeo. And the prisoners who are well-behaved get to come out and sell their art. They have a rock band that plays, and they also participate in the rodeo. So we decided to end our tour by checking that rodeo out, and that's what the song was inspired by just seeing how brave some of these guys, you know, who have very difficult lives being in that prison, how they get out there and they're so brave against the, you know, riding bulls and all this. And it's cool to see their art and stuff, so... The song was inspired by all the prisoners we saw that day at the rodeo.
Very cool. In fact, I'm going to digress for a moment because I know that you guys have played, you know, some crazy places over the world. And the reason I just thought of that is because Southern Culture on the Skids once did a tour of women's prisons. Did you know that?
Wow. We played with Southern Culture on the Skids once in Asheville, and they're a very cool band, but I had no idea that they did that.
I'm sorry. It was straight-up prisons. It wasn't women's prisons. It was straight-up prisons,
okay.
And they made the point of saying that, you know, the guys were staring long and hard at Mary, you know, the female bass player.
I bet.
But you guys have done some crazy tours and stuff. You've been – didn't you do, like, a rock tour through India?
Yeah, we played India, and we did the Middle East. We played in Erbil, Iraq, you know, for a lot of the Kurdish community at the Allah Center, and we played in Egypt. Yeah, we played in Beirut and stuff. So we went all over the Middle East to Jordan. So that was pretty exotic and exciting. One time we played Israel, and everybody had been talking about this kind of cultural boycott because of, you know, what's going on with Palestine. So we went across to Bethlehem into Palestine and just got some acoustic guitars and played for just kids on the street near the mosque.
Yeah.
You know, that was unsolicited, but we decided to do it, and we were playing Chuck Berry songs, and the kids were going crazy. So no one ever gave us any crap about the, you know, the cultural boycott, because after we played for Palestinians too, they couldn't really say anything, I guess.
Well, Cole, before we spin Angola Rodeo, thanks so much for talking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, and like I have to say, it's a big honor, you know, having you do this interview, because we grew up listening to the Underground Garage when we were younger kids working at the Majestic. And I remember going into Work Street and being a fan of the Woggles and you pointing me out certain cool garage rock records and comps. So it was a big inspiration for us, both the show and you personally. And so it's such an honor to get to do this interview and have y'all play our song. So thank you so much.
Well, Cole, you're certainly welcome, and good luck with all the new tour dates coming up. You know, I wish you great success with the new album. Like, all the records are great. Right now, let's take a listen to it. This is Angola Rodeo off the Black Lips' new album called The Black Lips Sing in a World That's Falling Apart. Here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
I'm
Radio here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The track is on the new album, The Black Lips Sing in a World That's Falling Apart. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Cole Alexander for yakking it up with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks going out as well to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Next time around, I'll be joined by Zeke Weakling, a.k.a. Bob Berger, of the Asbury Park, New Jersey-based band, The Weaklings. We'll talk about their latest album, Three. That's your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.